Good afternoon. It is 12:02 on a Monday, and you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. It's the one, it's the only, Police Chief Wolfboro Dean Rondo.
Woohoo!
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Enjoy your weekend?
I did, yeah. How about you?
Good.
Good.
Went to my my grandson's 10th birthday party.
Oh, that must have been exciting.
His parents hired a video game bus.
Oh, wow.
I had never even seen one of these things before. But it's this big, you know, bus that's retrofitted out with, you know, LCD screens and game consoles. It's kids loved it. Absolutely loved it. All right, so it is March 7th, and the only reason that I mention that is tomorrow, March 8th, is town meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a hallowed tradition all over a lot of places in New England.
Yeah, town vote. Yeah, absolutely. This is where we'll be voting. So the vote is going to be at town hall.
Yeah.
And that's going to be from 8 to 7. So get there. Cast your vote. And while you're doing that, if I could just take a little bit of time here and talk about this process. So we are an SB2 town, right? Mm-hmm. SB2 town, right? So we have the primary, we're voting on the primary operating budget, and if that fails, then we have obviously the default budget. There's not a lot of difference between the operating budget and the default budget for the town. So I would support the town's operating budget as proposed. When we go into a default budget, that creates tremendous problems for a town. Tremendous problems. It's just not good. All of the warrant articles on the budget, I think, are very worthy of being passed by the town electorate. And especially two warrant articles that are, aside from the town's operating budget or operating warrant article, the two that are, I think, are really important this year is Article 11, which I plan to vote for in the affirmative, and that is basically the rebuild of the Pop Whalen hockey arena. That's very important.
I haven't heard too many people against that.
No, I think that's gonna pass overwhelmingly, and it should, and we need to do that, and the friends of Pop Whalen have raised a considerable amount of money toward that rebuild. I'm going to call it a rebuild as opposed to a repair and rehabilitation. It really is a rebuild. It's a beautiful. It's going to be a beautiful facility. And it will turn a revenue for the town as well, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially, it will pay for itself over, you know, obviously a very long period of time. But you know, it's going to help bring money into the town, and so I think it's good for a whole bunch of different reasons. Certainly, it's good for the children. The other warrant article that I want to call special attention to is warrant article 23, and that is for construction grade drawings, diagrams, if you will, for the construction of a new police station, not public safety building, but police station, standalone police station. That's going to be out on the North Main Street, the old water tower site, as we like to call it. And that's very important. And that's a $300,000 warrant article. The reason that we're in the master plan that was developed a long time ago by Wolfboro calls for a public safety building to be constructed in 2022. Back in 2017, the town formed a public safety building committee, had two components, a police and fire component, and this committee came together, and we've been meeting ever since at various points and looking at a lot of different options and a lot of different constructs. What we determined is that if we were to build on the existing site that we were at now, 251 South Main Street, where the the public safety building is now and do a joint public safety building. So again, police, fire, with the expansion and the rehabilitation and the remediation of the existing building, we could be looking at between 12 and it, well, then it was in 2019 when we got the cost estimate, it was approximately $12 million. Now, because of, you know, COVID-19 supply issue problems and supply chain problems and cost escalations, you could be looking at something between $12 and $16 million, and that's an awful lot of money. That's an awful lot of money to have to bond. Okay, so this would be a bond, which means that we would go to the municipal bond bank and secure a bond, and we'd be paying off that bond probably for quite a long time. Alternatively, the committee and the Board of Selectmen made a decision to do a standalone police station on North Main Street. We have just enough room to do that. And that, conversely, that cost is about $6.2 million, so considerably less. I think you'll see that cost come down a little, not a lot, a little, as we get closer to construction, to maybe about 5.7, 5.8 in that neighborhood, but it depends. The reason that is likely to come down is the original cost of the building in 2019 for a standalone police station was 4.7 mil. And there's been some cost escalations, obviously, as a result of that. And some of that is a little artificial because of the supply chain issues. Those will work themselves. As we come out of COVID-19 and the pandemic is kind of weeds itself out and settles into the background, I think we'll end up fixing these supply chain issues. So even though the prices are not going to come down to pre-2019 levels, they will come down a little before they go back up again. The bond rates right now are very attractive, and clearly, I think everybody can see the virtue in trying to bond a $6.2 million building versus a $12 or $14 million building, right? I mean, there's virtue in that. The other thing that would happen near simultaneous to the police department being built on that site is a remediation and rehabilitation of the existing fire location, the fire department. So the fire department will stay at 251 South Main Street. We'll begin renovation of that building, fixing some of the critical issues that need to be fixed, and then redesigning that building to expand that fire station, which they desperately need to expand. The facilities right now are just too small for both the police and fire. We've outgrown, both the fire side has outgrown itself and the police side has outgrown itself. And in order to take advantage of new technologies and best practices in both police and fire science, we need to have these buildings, basically the police station built and the fire station remediated and expanded. The other thing that many people don't realize, and I didn't know this until I asked the question, as I get asked this a lot, how come we just can't, you know, make one big building up there at 251 South Main Street? Well, part of the problem is, if you're going to do that, you're looking at probably the better part of 2 years, right, from start to finish. And at some point, that fire equipment is going to have to come out of the bays. Mm-hmm. And that fire equipment has to essentially be maintained inside of a heated garage. And the reason for that is they carry water and they carry other chemicals, which need to be at basic room temperature, if you will, so they don't freeze. Right, when you freeze water, right, two things happen. You take a liquid and you turn it into a solid, and it expands. Right, water expands, and anybody that's had a can of soda or a bottle of water left outside will notice that the water expands. It'll break the plastic, it'll break the aluminum, and then when it thaws, it leaks out everywhere. Well, yeah, you just destroyed the vessel that it's in. right? You just ruined it. Well, that's the same thing with the fire trucks. All the fire trucks carry water, and they carry some other equipment that have chemicals in it. And if that stuff freezes, it's going to break all the seals and the pumps and everything. It just won't work. So if you were to move the fire equipment out, you're going to have to build a temporary facility to put that equipment into. So you get to see that there's a lot of costs associated with trying to do everything up at 251 South Main Street. The easiest thing to do is to move the police department out, have the fire guys expand over to our side, and then begin to address the issues that need to be addressed at that public safety facility, and turn it into a big fire station, and to fix the problems that are inherent in it. Remember, both the police and fire have been in that building for the better part of 50 years now.
Yeah,
that's a long time. It needs it desperately needs a lot of tender, loving care.
I'm sure, and of course, it would probably help to have the latest in data wiring and all of that.
Absolutely, everything in that building, and there should be no mystery here. Everything in that building right now is out of code. Okay, and you know, and someone's going to say, well, you're a government entity. You don't need to follow your own codes. Well, yeah, that's a bit hypocritical, right? I mean, I get it. They're technically correct.
Well, you're grandfathered usually on those things.
You are, but we're holding the citizens accountable to codes. Codes are important. We understand why we have codes. Codes are important. We need to follow codes. All right, so that's in my opinion, that's a very important task, right? We have to practice what we preach, so to speak. The other thing is that with the advances in best practices in police and fire science, you know, the firefighters are really worried about, you know, these carcinogens that they come into contact with when houses burn or vehicles burn. And they have procedures to mitigate the risk of cancer, right? And cold zones and hot zones, and they all mean something to firefighters. Those guys know what they're doing, and they take this stuff very seriously. And there's a reason why firefighters in the United States suffer incredibly high rates of various types of cancers. Well, we're trying to mitigate that. Well, right now, in when that building was built in 1972 or 1974, whatever the... They didn't understand. The fire science hadn't matured to the point it is now. They didn't understand the importance of cold zones and hot zones and cancer mitigation and so forth. We just didn't, all right? But we do now, and we need to be able to have a facility that our firefighters can, you know, after a fire or, you know, whether it's a vehicle fire or a building fire or whatever, where they can derobe safely, be decontaminated, take the dirty clothing and bunker gear and sanitize it and wash it and clean it and make sure that it's serviceable for the next time they go out. That's really, really important. That's important stuff. And there are things like that we just need to take advantage of, right? Because it is best practices, and it is part of the science of fighting a fire. I don't want to see my brother firefighters come down sick. I don't want to see that. And I think this is really important. So that's the reason why Warren Article 23 is really, really important, because it's a step in the right direction in getting both of these facilities, in one case built and the other basically rehabilitated.
What's the sound out there on your feeling out there on this particular article?
I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a group there on Facebook that, you know, they don't like the process. They don't think the PD and the fire department should be split up. They don't understand why. They don't like the location of North Main Street. So I can't please everybody. Right, I just can't do it. But this really is in the best interest of the town. It's the best and most cost-effective plan. It's certainly very doable, especially right now with the municipal bond rates being as low as they are. This is when you want to tackle these big infrastructure projects. If we wait, if we wait even a year, you're not likely to see these bond rates that we could be looking at in 2023. They could be quite expensive. So that's why this is critical. That's why it's critical now in 2022 that we get these drawings so we know what we're dealing with. You know, these are construction grade structural drawings to tell us how to build a police station, and then we put that plan into practice, and we start construction in 2023 and hopefully finish in 2024, and we can seize the opportunity right now with these really, really low municipal bond rates. And because if we have to wait even a year, we're going to lose the opportunity. It's going to be hugely expensive on the taxpayer, and that's not what we want. It's not what anybody wants.
Well, I do have a question, though.
Yeah, sure.
$300,000 for drawings?
They're construction-grade drawings.
Blueprints.
Yeah, they're that's exactly what they are. They're blueprints. Thank you very much. That's exactly what they are. They are very sophisticated blueprints that have all the math and the structural integrity and members shown on the blueprints. They're basically the plans on how to build the building. And it's not a drawing, it's many drawings, right? We've all seen construction grade drawings that tells you how far to go, how far deep down, what's the backfill, what's the structural integrity of the members that have to support the various columns and walls and roofs and so forth and so on. That's exactly what this is. It's all very technical.
So it's much more than having an architect make a series of
drawings. Oh, no, we have those right now. We have the architectural drawings, right. We have the what I call the renderings. Yes, we have those. This is not that. These are building blueprints is what they are. These are building blueprints.
So in essence, that makes the project shovel ready.
That's exactly what we're doing. Yes, that's the correct term. You're absolutely correct. This then makes the project shovel ready. We can start putting shovel in the ground. That's correct.
Okay.
And that's what we want. This is really this is the best option. This is the and we look just to be clear, we looked at other locations, you know, 109A, right, along where Wickers the old Wickers building is and out by Winnipesaukee Lumber. The problem is, and we looked at that actually a couple of times, that is a very attractive piece of land. We'd have to do a lot of remediation. It's a lot of wetlands in there. We have to pull out the bad soil and put in the new soil. That was doable. That's a little expensive, but that's doable. But the big problem was the propane and storage farm for Eastern Propane, fuel oil storage farm, is back there. We're in the blast radius of that. That wouldn't be good. You don't want to put your police department and the town's only communications facility within a blast radius of propane tanks. That's not good.
Yeah.
No, that's bad. That's really bad. So we did look at Lehner Street area. I'm not sure Lehner Street, and that keeps coming up. That's not a good location. You don't want to bury a police station in the middle of a deep residential area off a main thoroughfare, because you're going to be increasing the traffic flow in and out of there. And that could be annoying to the residents that live there, and it's not very conducive to movement, right? You really want a police station on a major thoroughfare like North Main Street or like South Main Street or what have you. So where we did look at Lehner Street, we ruled it out. It just wasn't a good location, wasn't suitable. We felt. The parcels of land weren't really all that good for building on, as we determined. We loved the old bank building, but unfortunately Brewster Academy bought that out from under us. so that went away. That option went away rather quickly. We did like the area by Clark Plaza. That is the croquet court. But that property owner didn't want to sell to the town. He wanted a commercial enterprise to go in there, so that took that off the table. We did look at the property out by the fire substation. One, it was a little too small for our needs. Two, it's wetlands. Three, we'd have to do some water sewer hookups. That gets to be very very expensive, extending those sewer and water lines out to that location. So that was the reason we didn't, that site didn't really bode well for us either. The North Main Street site is right now very attractive.
Okay. Do you have a contingency if this does not pass?
No.
Okay, so there's no plan B on this.
There is no plan B on this one. Here's the thing, right? You're right. Something is going to have to be done. And I'll tell you, if this doesn't go through, I don't see what else you could do other than say, okay, we try to give you the most cost-effective. All right, now we're coming forward with a $14 million build. I don't think that's a very good idea. I don't know what the other options may be. We haven't got that far.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying this one's kind of critical. We're really hoping that obviously common sense will prevail and people will see the wisdom in looking at a very cost-effective and phased, in terms of the fire department, phased build of the fire station and the very cost-effective construction of a police station.
Mm-hmm. When assuming everything passes, when do you expect to start construction?
So what would happen is if Warren Article 23 passes, and we hope it does, and I do want you to support that, folks, then we would come at the voters next year, and the town manager said this in the town's deliberative session. He'll be coming at the voters with a bond request for 6.1, 6.2 mil, or if the price comes down, 5.7, 5.8, but whatever it is. And any remaining monies, from the that not spent in the construction drawings would defray the cost of that as well. So that would be the following year in 2023. If that passes, then we basically start construction in 2023, and hopefully we're done by June of 2024.
Okay. It is 12:25 here in WASR. Very cloudy today. Some light rain out there. Anyway, if you want to hear the show again, missed part of it, whatever, you can go to WASR.net and download the podcast there, which will be there after the show airs. Long as we're on the subject of costs, we were talking about it, briefly off air before the show. The price of fuel.
Oh boy.
Has really kicked some of your budgets in the butt.
Oh yeah, tremendously.
Yeah,
tremendously.
Now, do you literally have to start deciding, who to rob from to pay this fuel bill?
So, I have. So this is exactly the reason why, if people are following the PD, this is exactly the reason why I started 2 years ago, 3 years ago, moving in the direction of hybrid vehicles for the PD. And I know I was heavily criticized for that, but this is exactly the reason why. So I have a fuel budget, and we budget our fuel, so we buy in bulk. So we secure that price ahead of time, and then we buy it. But it's going to be expensive. It's a 6 month, budget, if you will. So for the first 6 months, we're going to be okay. It's the remaining 6 months that I'm worried about.
Now you dispense your own fuel. You don't buy it. You don't buy it locally.
I don't buy it locally. We buy it in bulk, and we have cards at the fuel at the public work station.
Okay.
Off of 109A, and then so that's where we fill up. So, so I'm fortunate. I use gasoline only for my vehicles. Now the hybrid vehicles and obviously the Tesla are really, you know, coming. They're you know, now I think people can understand why we went that route and why it was a smart move. And in fact, this year I was able to reduce my fuel cost by 200 gallons. Next year I'll be able to reduce it as more hybrid vehicles come online in the PD. I'll be able to reduce it even more. But it's going to be very gradual. It'll be a little bit here, a little bit there as we continue to move forward and get all 11 vehicles in the fleet to hybrid status. That being said, yeah, I'm going to have to look at moving money around in the budget if gas doesn't come back down.
Do you think it will?
Oh, I don't know. You know, this country certainly has the capacity in and of itself to bring it down. What has to happen is in Washington, they have to really change their fuel energy policies. They have to get back to drilling and expanding capacity. They have to start fracking again. They have to start shale production back up again. They have to expand those industries. They have to start moving a lot more fuel oil. And so that's why things like, in my opinion, things like, you know, the Keystone Pipeline are so important. You know, had we not stopped that, you know, almost a year ago, we'd be nearing completion of that now, just in the nick of time. We really should be looking at turning that back on, because what that will do is it will improve the economies almost overnight between Canada and the United States. And you'll be able to move, once that's completed, you'll be able to move a lot of fuel oil from where it is basically found, which is in Alaska, Canada, and northern United States, and then move it overland to the refineries and the shipping points down along the southern coasts of the United States, whether it's Florida or whether it's Louisiana or whether it's Mississippi or along the Gulfport area. That's where we have a lot of fuel refineries for export. This country can be an oil-producing nation. Right now we're choosing not to be, and I think we need to really reverse that. In my opinion, that's the only way we're going to lower the cost of fuel. The Saudi prince right now is very angry at the president for the president's calling him out over the murder of that Saudi Turkish journalist a few years ago. So they're not inclined right now. They're definitely not inclined to work with this administration. Okay. So that you know, no, don't look for the Saudis to help us.
And unfortunately, they're the power behind OPEC as well.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely, yeah. So, and remember, Russia is an oil-producing nation,
yes,
right? And Russia, you know, we import, a lot of people don't know this, we import 3% of our domestic consumption from Russia. So as the price of fuel oil grows per barrel, so do Russian profits.
Right.
Right? So these are the reasons why when we have domestic policies, we have to look at the second and third order effect of those policies, and we have to look at what's going to affect the nation, and what effect is that going to have on strategically on the United States. And changing our energy policies midstream and pulling out the rug from underneath the shale producers was not good policy. That was just not good policy. And it's kind of put us in this position we're in right now.
Well, on the other hand, at $115 a barrel, I have a feeling that there'll be quite a bit of supply coming, you know, out of the woodwork, I hope.
You know, I hope you're right. And I just don't know. But I'll tell you right now, I fully expect oil to get in excess of $130 a barrel before it starts to come back down.
That translates to $4.75 to $5 a gallon.
Oh, maybe even more. Maybe even six.
Back of the envelope.
Yeah, maybe even six. Yeah, this is crazy. And the strategic reserves aren't, you know, that's just too little, too late. That's not going to do anything.
It's also crude oil, what a lot of people don't understand, doesn't do anybody a whole lot of good until it's refined.
It's got to be refined, yeah.
And, yeah. I mean,
there's lots of reasons why to use U.S. oil, and there's a lot of reasons why U.S. oil is better than European oil or even Saudi oil, and it has nothing to do with it has nothing to do with what I think people would think. It's less pollutants in U.S. oil than it is in, say, European oil or Saudi oil. So it's better for the environment. You know, the transportation costs are less. If we produce our own oil, the transportation costs are a lot less.
Right.
Right. So there's a lot of different advantages to using U.S. oil, and we should be producing, this country should be producing. Now, is that to say that we should not be looking at renewable energy or clean energy? No, not at all. We need to be doing both. We need to be doing both, boy, I'll tell you, I'm not the guy in charge. So,
well, interestingly enough, let's for a minute focus a little bit on your Tesla.
Yes.
Are they price competitive? In other words, what are you using now? Durangos, I think. No, or
no, I have Ford hybrid Explorers. I have two. In the fleet, the goal is to change all of the regular Explorers over to hybrid. So as they age out of the fleet, I'm replacing them with hybrid vehicles. Okay. So right now we have two Ford Explorers that are hybrids and one Tesla.
Is the Tesla, has it proven itself
yes.
as a patrol vehicle?
No, not as a patrol vehicle. It's a great vehicle. It's a great administrative vehicle. It's very inexpensive to run. About I think we've run it now for about 6 months or so, and it's cost us, you know, somewhere between $70 and $80 for the 6 months.
That's incredible.
I know. So from that standpoint, it's a success. As a patrol vehicle, I don't see it going into the patrol fleet ever.
Okay. It's just for what reasons?
So it takes too long to charge the battery. In the wintertime, the battery, in this environment, the battery depletes itself very quickly. The reason I'm not going to put it in the patrol fleet right now, we only have one Tesla. And it's a completely different vehicle. It's not like you get in and turn a key and the vehicle comes on. Everything is controlled by basically an iPad that's built in. And I need my officers to if you can imagine, a lot of things happen in the course of a patrol shift. And that Tesla is set up so differently than all the other vehicles. I need the muscle memory of where everything is, where the switch for the rifle and the shotgun are, the radio, the siren, in case of an emergency. I don't want somebody fumbling around on a computer screen. And if they're only driving it once every 2 or 3 months as part of a patrol shift, they're not going to develop that muscle memory I'm going to need in a crisis. Right, so that's the reason where we'll never put it in the patrol fleet. Right, and right now there's not a cage that's made for that. I would have to have one fabricated for the back of the vehicle so it can't carry prisoners.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different little reasons why it is just not a good patrol vehicle for us. It's a great vehicle. We're very grateful for it. Don't get me wrong. It's saving us a lot of money. We're very grateful, but it's not a good patrol vehicle.
Okay. 12:36 here in WASR. Let's talk a little bit in general. I had come up with a subject today, but of course, you know, modern or current events take precedence, so we thought we would cover those things first. One of the things I want to talk about were or was interrogations.
Yes.
When you talk to, you know, a police officer. You know, you see it on TV, all the different techniques that, you know, get under the perp skin or whatever.
Good cop, bad cop.
Right, but that's television.
But
on the other hand, there is a science to this.
There is a science. So, and I've been through many interview and interrogation courses. In fact, a lot of my training at the FBI Academy was focused wholly on interview and interrogation as part of behavioral sciences program I went through. So, there's basically two types of, you call it interrogation. There's the field of eliciting information, right? There's the interview, and then there's the interrogation. The interview is meant to, and they're two totally different things. Okay. The interview is meant to obtain information, right? The interrogation is quite different. That is designed to get an admission or a confession. Okay. So those are two different things. Often we do an interview, and then later we'll do an interrogation. Sometimes the interview can turn into an interrogation because you've now obtained all the information you need, so you switch gears. But they're two totally different approaches. As well, you can imagine, during an interview, I'm trying to solicit information from you, or I'm trying to lock you into your lies. So that's the purpose of the interview, right? If I can't get the truth from you, then I want to lock you into your lies. And then during the interrogation, I'm looking for a confession or admission.
There's the old expression that generally you don't ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Well, that would hold true and definitely in court when you're in prosecutorial mode. But in an interview, that's the whole point. You're asking that information because you're trying to confirm or deny the information you already have. Okay. So it could be something as saying, hey, you know, so-and-so said you were here at this moment in time, but now you're saying that you weren't. Can you explain that? And so you got to try to find out if your information is any good. Maybe your information isn't good at all. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So oftentimes we get tips, right? And we get hearsay information, right? We all know what hearsay is. It's removed once or twice. You know, I heard from our friend who got it from a friend who got it from a friend that whatever, you know, so-and-so has the smoking gun, right? They've got the murder weapon or they got the drugs or whatever. Well, you know, maybe that's information is easy enough to check out and we'll follow up on it and we'll run it to ground to try and get the ground truth. That's the purpose of an interview.
Okay. So you wouldn't necessarily tell them that you think they're full of it.
No, not at all. No. Because that's not the purpose of that at that moment. You're trying to elicit information so you can corroborate and run it to ground and confirm or deny. Like I said, it gets back to the science of this whole thing. Oftentimes, if I get somebody that lies to me, well, that's fine, right? I'll just lock them into their lies, meaning that I will have so much information by so many people in written format that I'll arrest somebody for a crime. But I told you, I didn't do it. Well, you know, I got all these other people here. Give me that statement. Give it to me. You know, let me read you your Miranda warning advisements. Give me your statement. And then, but I got these five people that saw you do the crime, you know, whatever it may be. So we're locking that person into their lie. They're saying, well, they're basically saying, I didn't do it. I was here. I was somewhere else. And you've just locked them into their lie. Now they're lying to you. And you've got it in a written statement, and you're going to take that to court, and that's as good as a confession.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a little bit different than television, but...
It's probably not quite as exciting, I would imagine.
Well, you know, you always see the stereotype with the, you know, you turn up the heat in the room, and
yeah.
you put the suspect in the wobbly chair. And
yeah, those are all, yeah, to make the person uncomfortable. You know, I hate to say it, but those methods and techniques are still used.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, I realize that, you know, you're a little bit biased on this one, but... Is it a good idea generally to talk to the police? Because there's a lot of people whose advice is
yes.
don't.
I think there is if you've got nothing to hide. I always think talking to the police is a good thing. Clearly, if you've got if you got something to hide, you probably want to talk to an attorney first. And that attorney is going to say, okay, what did you do? Don't talk to the cops. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of cases. I can think of a lot of cases where people could save themselves a lot of aggravation if they just talk to the police. Yeah. So.
Now, when you're interrogating a person of interest, I guess it would be. Well, mm-hmm. that would be more of an interview. From what you were telling me.
Well, it depends. It depends. So typically the way I run an investigation is I will start to follow the leads and the forensic evidence and let that, you know, take me to wherever it's going to take me. And I develop my suspect or suspects, and I will collect everything that I can possibly collect before and analyze that so I can draw some conclusions before I start going to my suspect or suspects. Now, if I have a number of suspects, so we'll take the 7 Railroad Ave investigation I ran probably about 20 years ago. I was looking at about 19 different people for various crimes, most of which were felonies, burglary, robbery, arson, all sorts of stuff. I picked, once I collected all of my evidence and did all of my interviews on the witnesses and people that I thought had knowledge of what was going on, and I developed my list of suspects, then what I did is I said, okay, who are my weakest suspects? And then I went to them. And in non-custodial environments, I call them in for non-custodial interviews or non-custodial interrogations. And one by one, I ended up breaking them, getting the confessions or admissions, getting them to roll on each other. Now, there's a lot of technique involved in that.
So when you're looking at it, do you say to yourself, I think we'll try this particular approach?
That's correct. That is exactly correct. And yes, I have used the good cop, bad cop approach, and yes, it does work. I like to pit one against the other. So a great movie to watch where this is done is L.A. Confidential.
Okay. Oh, that's one of those true crime.
My
wife loves that stuff.
So L.A., there's a great scene in there where the lieutenant is interviewing three suspects in a kidnapping and rape, and he's pitting one against the other. I've done that before. That works really well. You know, I've even taken sworn statements that I've gotten from individuals and put it in front of the other person and say, hey, this is what your buddy just said. It's right there in black and white. And, oh, that's not true. You know, and then... Then they go off and then, do you want to give me a statement to your side of the story? I mean, because you're about to get buried here. You know, you're about to go to prison for a long time because he's fingering you for the crime. That's not true. Let me tell you what happened. And then I'll get more information. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's a, I don't know what, I guess you could call it a feeling of accomplishment once you get the facts that you're looking
for. It is. It can be very satisfying, especially when you solve a a complex case like that. You know, that was that was every day for almost 4 months, that case.
That's a wow.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a long time. But at the end, we had quite a few people get indicted on that case.
How often does that happen? Or how much of their average, say, week would a police officer be interviewing or interrogating people?
Well, here, you know, law enforcement here in Wolfboro is very different than, say, law enforcement in Manchester.
Sure, that makes sense.
And the reason, because my officers, the best way to think about the Wolfboro Police Department is that we're 14 uniformed detectives.
Okay.
All right, because we're doing everything from traffic enforcement to criminal investigations. In Manchester, Nashua, they have whole units that do interview and interrogation. They have units that do traffic enforcement, and the two don't meet. You know, they never meet. So here we do it all. So a good portion of the day, probably 50% of your time throughout the course of the work week is spent doing some form of interview or interrogation of suspects.
So quite a bit then.
Yeah, quite a bit.
And of course, that all gets documented on
in a report.
Yep. Is there a specific form you use?
Oh yeah, we have statement forms that we use, and we have the IMC report format that we use.
Oh boy, went down the wrong way.
Yep, it happens.
Yeah, it does. 12:48 here in WASR. It is Monday, and that means we're talking with Wolfboro Police Chief Dean Rondo. In our remaining time, you've got a fundraising event scheduled.
Yeah, we do. Exciting. We're myself and eight other men and women from the PD are jumping into the frigid waters of Lake Winnipesaukee on 11 March. That's this coming Friday. Down at Clearwater Lodges. And we're doing that to raise money for New Hampshire Special Olympics.
Fascinating. How long have you been working with the Special Olympics?
So I've been doing fundraising for Special Olympics since I've been a police officer here for almost 26 years now.
Do you have a connection to it?
No, not really. It was something that was already pre-existing when I came here. And understand Stevens, they've been supporting Special Olympics. So remember, that's going back a ways, right? He was the chief of police here 26 years ago. And so the PD has been supporting it for the better part of 40 years now. And we'll do, you know, the torch running in the springtime and then the polar plunge in the wintertime. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. We're going to live stream it. We have some corporate sponsors, if I may.
Absolutely.
So Eastern Propane and Oil they're bringing down the warming trailer for us, and they're putting out some portable fire pit units so we can warm ourselves after the jump. The men and women down at Wolfboro Boat Company have generously donated very heavily to the Special Olympics torch run this year. So that was huge. We're very grateful for them. So I just want to, you know, give a big shout out to the Wolfboro Boat Company. This would be, you know, Nate Druin and Trell Hartford and his team down there at the Wolfboro Boat Company. That was hugely appreciated. We're very grateful for that. Luke Friedenberg is also one of our supporters. He has the Wolfboro Barge and Docks Company, and he's the one that's doing all the work down on the town docks. So we're very grateful to his company and his support to the police department in New Hampshire Special Olympics. We have I'm trying to think of some of the other big donors that we've had. I'll just single out a couple of people. Former selectman Paul O'Brien He was he contributed very heavily last year, as he has this year. We're very grateful to his support and his friendship, and it's doing the right thing. None of the money goes to the PD. It all goes to New Hampshire Special Olympics, so they can hold the events down at the University of New Hampshire campus every summer, July, August timeframe.
Now, so tell me about this. You guys actually go down to the lake.
Yeah, and I did fail to mention one of our corporate sponsors, and that's Clearwater Lodges.
Okay.
And that's Andre DeBeer and his wife and his team that go through great effort every year to host this for us and clear the snow away and break the ice up by the dock so we can jump in the water. And he's offered that venue up to us again this year, and we're very grateful for that. So Andre and his team, Andre DeBeer, he's also a lieutenant in the fire department. And of course, the Wilpro Fire Rescue Department. I can't say enough about those very brave men and women. They're in the water in their exposure suits, making sure that none of us drowned when we jump in that freezing cold water. So they have rescue swimmers in the water just in case something goes south, and they put their ladders in so we can get out of the dock. But yeah, it's down at it'll be this Friday, 11 March, down at Clearwater Lodges at about 2:30 or so, and it looks to be a pretty good day. I think it's going to be 44, 45 degrees, and no wind, so that's good.
Yeah,
that's good, because last year the air was colder than the water.
Wow.
Yeah, it was brutal.
It must have been.
So anyway, yeah. So come down and join us, or do what you can do. We're going to live stream it on Facebook, and if you feel like you want to contribute any amount, $5, $10, $25 is greatly appreciated, folks. You can go on our police department website. You can find I'm Freezing for a Reason. This has a little sketch of a polar bear. You click on that and support the team member of your choosing. Please support me. Because we have a little race going on at the PD, you can raise, the largest amount of money. But it's all for a good cause. Last year we were over. I raised almost $1,900 or just over $1,900 last year. Actually, I think right now I'm up around 1,200 and change.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's good, but any amount, folks, is greatly appreciated. Even if it's $5, that's fine. You know, it's for a great cause. It's a cause near and dear to our heart. We've been doing this now for the better part of 40 years.
Now, where does this, I realize it goes to Special Olympics, which works with Easter Seals, I believe.
I don't know the connection to Easter Seals. I would imagine there is a connection. I just don't know what it would be. I'm not really in that end of it. I just they just come to us every year, and we always bend over backwards to help.
Now, is there a particular funding campaign that you're supporting, or is it just for the general use of the special athletes?
It's just for the general use of the special athletes, right? Okay. All the money goes directly to Special Olympics. And by the way, I just want to say, on our Facebook page, the link is secure. You can click right on that. They'll even send you a donation receipt, so you can write it off your taxes. So it is tax deductible. It is a 501(c), folks. So we appreciate it. Listen, one last thing about our corporate sponsors, to include Clearwater Lodges and the Wolfboro Barge and Docks and the Wolfboro Boat Company and Eastern Propane and Oil. We know that you have a choice when you seek a vendor to do whatever it is, whether it's a contractor, place to visit, or place to store your boat or get your boat repaired. And we would encourage you to obviously do so locally and support our local vendors, and we appreciate it. And remember, they're contributing very heavily to this campaign of ours. And they don't have to do that, and they're doing it because not only does it support Wolfboro and greater Wolfboro area children, but it supports all the children in the state of New Hampshire. It's just a great program. So please reward them with your service and your patronage. So
how many officers involved in this?
So right now, eight.
Eight.
Eight, okay. Yeah. And the team is on the, if you go click on the Facebook link, you'll see the team members jumping in. It'll all be all listed out there for you.
And it's Friday?
Friday, 11 March.
At 2:30.
14:30 hours for all you civilians out there.
12:57 here at WASR. Out of curiosity, now, is there anybody else that's involved in the plunge?
No, just the police officers. Police officers, well, and that includes our dispatchers as well. So I include those police personnel, right, because dispatch falls under the police department.
Which reminds me, in our remaining couple of minutes, about the new dispatch panel. How is that going?
So that's going well. So obviously, and this gets right back to one. This is a nice way to close it out. This gets right back to Warren Article 23. So we got enough money to, if we had to buy the dispatch console tomorrow. If we had to, what we're trying to do is schedule the dispatch console to be put in when the station is built, because these things are big and they're not very mobile. They're not designed to be. If we don't get the station built, I'm going to have to put the dispatch console in the old station, only to have it ripped out in 2 or 3 years and put in a new one. That's a huge added expense. That isn't cheap. That's very expensive to do. And invariably, in the process of ripping it out, things are going to get broken. Antennas and couplings and connectors, all that stuff gets broken. You know as well as I do, try moving a radio station.
Oh, I've done it.
Yeah, I know you have, because I see your head going north and south. And yeah, and things get broken.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they do, right? And because they're not very mobile units. They're not supposed to be. So again, that's why I say there's this is not as easy as somebody saying, well, you know, maybe North Main Street isn't the best location. Maybe we should think about. No, we've done enough thinking about this. We've been thinking about this for 4 years. And if we wait any longer, it's just going to get that much more expensive. We need to do this now while we can take advantage of low municipal bond rates. And every day, you know, I'm rolling the die, because that dispatch console that we have is actually quite old.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're just about out of time. However, in our remaining few seconds, the old joke, vote for the Kennedy of your choice, but vote.
Voting is
tomorrow. A lot of Warren articles, and, you know, it just as an editorial, not on behalf of the radio station, vote yes to redo the pop. I think that's a great thing for the
It is. And the vice chair, Bob Tuffer, of the budget committee, wrote a nice article in the Grand State News, and he said, I'm voting for all of the warrants. And the town did a really nice job this year. The budget committee, the town manager, all the department heads did a really nice job on the budget this year. And everything is very tight. Everything's very tight. So please vote and support Warren Article 23, support Warren Article 11, and support the town warrant, the operating budget. Thank you, folks.
It's 1 o'clock.